welcome back to another episode of Extra Feature Interview. Today I have not one, but two guests. One was a surprise. I didn't know it earlier today. I have Anthony Epp and Helena Thom. Tom, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thanks so much,
Simon.
Since this was a surprise to me, and the movie is 13 Miles, if I forgot to mention it, I didn't even know you guys were writing partners till today. So this, I have a lot of questions in it.
Oh, perfect. We didn't prep you.
Yeah, you didn't prep. Well, you did. At least you told me. So I didn't do anything. So my question is, I mean, if you're seeing this in the video, see what I see. Neither of you look like you run for a living. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you guys are both retired from doing marathons and all this. So what's the background about this film? This looks like something you guys don't do. Not saying you're out of shape. Just saying, this is hard, this film.
Yeah. The idea came from, we volunteered at a triathlon before we started writing it. But before that I had, been a marathon runner and a triathlete before that, very much on the amateur level. And I think it's like, a lot of things where we knew we wanted to do a movie together. I'll let Helena describe why she wanted to do a movie with me. But the crux of it was that we were trying to think of, well, what are things that we know something about? And I said, well, I knew some interesting stories about some triathletes out there that, I thought we could dig into. And that kind of was the spark and the genesis of it. And then, Helena wanted to make a movie with me because.
Well, let's back that up. You were a triathlete.
Yeah.
You've done marathons, you've done triathlons, you have friends who still do triathlons, who still do marathons. So that is actually your background, not mine.
True.
But I wanted to write this story because with Anthony specifically, because at the time we had just started dating and I had gotten out of a very long-term relationship, and most relationship tests are the IKEA test. I don't know if you've heard of the IKEA test.
I've
dubbed it as the IKEA test, and it's whether you start putting together an IKEA project as a couple, and after you've finished it, hopefully, do you walk away as a couple? So with Anthony, he's actually by nature a very calm and patient person. So I thought, well, he would pass that. But then I found out he was into film and he, writes and stuff. So I thought that's going to be my IKEA test. So I decided we would write a script together, to see how that would work.
How we would work together.
I guess my question is, should my wife be beside me doing an interview? Because she's never done one. So did we fail the IKEA test? Because she's never done an interview in her life. Don't know what I asked her to.
You should try it. You should try it.
She has no interest.
You.
Needless to say, we finished the first version of the script, I think a month before we got married. So.
Okay. So let me still want to put this back. Now, when you were writing the script, obviously Anthony does with the triathlon part, being marathon, you understand problems, injuries, all that. I get that. What was your approach to the script? Were you the relationship one that wrote about that, or was that Anthony too?
I think both of us kind of had a hand in kind of all, like, the script entire, like, the entire script. But my inputs was Cora's relationship, the long-term relationship with this human being who you feel like, okay, now you're done this thing. We're going to move on and we're going to start our life together. And I've dedicated my life. You've dedicated your life to this one sport or this one entity in your life. And now that that's over, we can just move on and move forward. And that was kind of my thread in the script. Because I had just come out of a relationship where I was that supportive role. I always took the back seat kind of thing. And yeah.
This explains a lot. I'm getting a lot out of you that I got the film. That's good.
Right, so right what you know.
Does this allow your characters to have depth? I would say yes, because I really felt Cora was fleshed out immensely. I thought each, even the marathon runners were really fleshed out.
Yeah.
Now, I do have, since we're getting into this, which I hadn't even written my notes, I have a small, was the sister ever have more information? That was the one I felt was left out with the sister. There's nothing against it. She works perfectly, but I wanted more of that relationship. Because I find it's just very quick cuts I get with her. Was there a script or something with more depth to her, or you just didn't have time?
There's a bigger version of this where it's just a longer movie, and I think a lot of it came down to there's two or three scenes, big scenes with both characters that were cut from the film in the end because we were like, this movie is going to be 2 hours and 20 minutes long if we don't cut it back.
Too long.
and I think that we made some hard decisions in the cutting process of like cutting out some scenes, but also I think in the writing process, we cut a lot of backstory out because we thought, well, let's dig into it. Let's sort of do the idea of like, let's get into it in the middle of everything. So, we kind of hoped that the audience would catch up to the relationship themselves and see themselves, like see that sister relationship.
Yeah.
Already and be able to fill in the blanks for themselves and not try to spoon feed too much of it to them. And the same thing on the runner's side, on Trevor's side, to basically not try to over build the backstory of like why he is who he is. It's just say, look, this is who he is at this stage in his life. This is where we're going to start from here, and we're going to only show you the bits and let you fill in the blanks yourself. But I don't disagree. There's a lot. I think that Lexi, and especially because Sadie, who plays the character, brought so much to the character I think you leave wanting more from her because she's also such a compelling character.
The scene I needed a little bit more, which people who've seen the film will probably know. There's a big problem, which I will discuss later in the thing, that happens in a certain place. And I find it sort of quick. Do you know what I mean? The argument happens, something happens at night, the argument in the morning, and we don't really go back to it until the end of the film. It's kind of like, I want to know more about that basic argument. I know you do try to give me as much as you can in 2.5 minutes, I would say. I'm really looking for like another minute and a half. I know I'm being fussy here, but as a viewer, I wanted more of that one scene. Was there more? Do you know what I'm getting at? I will go into it later.
Well, the way we shot too, like we shot it very, as you can tell, it's very handheld and very like raw, sort of very raw and like realistic in the moment. And I think that there's a lot of extra story that, we did a lot of that, it, like almost some of it's even improvised, I think, that where there's some improv stuff that comes in there that just is very good. And it just, some of it made it in the film and some of it didn't. And we sort of made choices, but it's interesting because I think some of that too is maybe that's good that you want more. We need a spinoff of, the Lexi story.
I need more. Okay. Let's get into the film. Enough of the script. People have to watch it to find out what we're talking about. At the beginning of the film, we have a big triathlon event. I know you use this and supplemented in the film for all your races. I kind of started to notice because I'll tell you a giveaway that's really easy. You saw the same statue too many times. There's a statue I started recognizing throughout.
Statue. Let's see.
There's a pan shot. It sounds like a statue, a silver statue. I know it's the same race you're using all the time. It looked like just one race to me that you're filming.
Well, interesting. I'm not sure which statue you're referring to. Probably
the one in
Okanagan. It's probably the one in Okanagan.
Maybe.
But we only had that statue once and possibly twice. Okay.
100% twice. Because I know it's twice. I'm like, is this the same race all the time? Just got... So that's
it's the one at the beginning, and then there's one in the middle that we used the same race. We filmed the same race, and we used it for two different races. Okay. That might be.
But the first race was actually in Hawaii.
No, so I'm talking about the last race. I see the same statue twice.
Oh, interesting.
If it's the last race, that would make sense because it is supposed to take place.
Okay.
In the I know what you're referring to, the pre-race. Where we actually have the shot of the statue. And then right before the gun goes off, we have Corey, who plays Vanessa, doing like the reporting. Yes. Okay, I know exactly what you're... So that's all actually at the same location. So that was on purpose.
Okay, that's my question. So where are the two races then in the film? One, you're telling me it's Hawaii, and the second one's in the Okanagan Valley?
And we have one that's called, like, that was done in the desert.
In California.
In California. And we did a Vancouver triathlon. We did several races, actually. There were multiple races in that film.
So when you're showing up, do you have to call the organizer and say, hey, we're coming to film this, or you just show up?
No, we called the organizer. So we did a bit of like live event sort of, we had a very small crew. So like our crew size was a camera person, a sound person, a makeup person. And then we had craft services kind of off in the distance.
And then it was us doing the rest of it.
And then the actors. Yeah. So it was very tiny. So we basically, we talked to the organizers of all the races and we got permission and everything like that. So they gave us passes to get into certain areas to film in. And then we were very careful about not interfering with any of the race activity that was going on. But they let us put our actors in, you know, in the race, if you will, in a lot of places, which added, I think, to the realism and gave it a little bit of scope as well. So
I was getting there next. Now, when you're inserting an actor into a scene, obviously it's controlled. Well, you can't control this. You have people running. So you have your actor on the side. Okay, I need you to go now. Is that what happens? Or how does this
work? Pretty much.
I mean, the starting line for a couple of them, they started at the same time the other racers started. And so we had them go out. They were wearing the same colored caps as the other racers. They went out and then we cut just before we told them go swim about or go like 50 feet and then turn around or 50 meters, then turn around and come back. And so we just had them start and go and then they turn around and come back. And it was actually funny because there were some volunteers who weren't in on the thing, and so they would just go, "What are these people? What are these? What's this person doing?"
They actually thought that our actors were cheating in the triathlon, so they would see our actors go out and then kind of scoot over to the exit shoot, and then come back out. And a few people who weren't, I guess, aware of the situation, we're stopping them and we're questioning it. And we had to explain, oh, we're doing a film. Here's our pass. And so they verified everything. And then after a while, it was fine. But yeah, it was actually quite funny.
Do either of your actors run triathlons normally?
Jovi, our character who plays the female lead, she does not. But, and Cam does not either, but he used to swim, I think, competitively.
Yeah.
And then in preparation for this film, he started training as though he was a triathlete. And for some of the cuts that we have in the film, it was actually him in the race, which he, I think, got first place for his age group. And he did fairly well, actually. he did like two races for the film and we filmed, I think, one of them. And the first one he did, we didn't even know he had done. And so we're like, the next one you do, let us know. And so we put it in the film.
Okay. How was filming driving scenes?
Oh, yeah. That was basically our camera person in the back seat or in the passenger seat.
Mm-hmm. No issues?
I mean, No.
She's strapped in.
Yeah, I mean they're all wearing seatbelts.
These are the questions. Yeah, are they strapped in? Those are important things.
They're all you know, they all wearing seatbelts and stuff like that. We would mic up the cars with we had some lav mics sort of strategically placed. Our sound person would like put some in like strategic places, and then the actors themselves had lav mics. And then we just had the camera in the back seat, and when we got to the where we had to shoot the passenger on the front passenger side, the camera person basically just like hugged right up against the driver and shot the passenger in profile.
She was always strapped in, and she used like the seats to kind of stabilize the camera as best as she could. And a lot of the times, again, we had such a small crew. By the time you fit the director, the camera, the actors, and the sound person, the car's full. So we're all kind of like five people in the vehicle. And we're all strapped in. And it's not not the usual where you have cameras and on a
hostess tray or anything.
Yeah, on a hostess tray or anything like that.
No, that's why I like to ask you these questions. I know you have no money. I want to see what you're up to.
A lot of it was really like, and you'll see, like, if there's anything where you don't see the actors, it's us in the car, basically just with the camera filming on a day that nobody was around.
Yeah, on a secluded road somewhere. Yeah.
I love to discuss locations, so we're going to do a little bit of location discussion.
Okay.
For sure.
Your beautiful pool.
Oh, the swimming pool for the scene? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So that's in Vancouver. That's the Vancouver Aquatic Center here in Vancouver.
Oh, just beautiful. Bliss Ship?
Bliss, is that the coffee shop or the...
Bliss, like the bakery?
Yeah. So that was the location that we talked with the owner of the location, and it's in Penticton, British Columbia. So it's in it's in the Okanagan Valley, and they let us film there. Off hours.
And it's frequented by triathletes as well.
Yeah, so that helped. So they let us film their off hours. We filmed some night scenes there and some, like, basically, especially up north here, when the sun doesn't really set until like 9 or 10 at night at the earliest. Mm-hmm. So we were able to get some nice shots when we needed daytime, and we were able to get some shot, like, we were able to actually shoot some night stuff as well, which is obviously there's some scenes at night there.
Mm-hmm. A running room, which I thought was kind of weird. I didn't expect that.
Yeah, so that was, I used to manage that store so there was that connection.
The apartment or a house, I'm not sure what it was.
Cora's apartment. I found that in the early days of Airbnb. And the lady who owned it was like a carriage home. And the lady who owned the property was super nice. And when she found out we were filming an indie film, she was more than happy to let us rearrange the furniture and film there.
Okay. Now I want to go back to the bakery for one scene. And we know what scene I'm going to discuss. A certain item hits a floor at one point. I think I'm trying to be
mm-hmm.
as quick as I can. How was the cleanup for that? And how did that go? Like, was that an actual cake you made or an actual cake they made?
We bought the cake.
We purchased a few of those.
Yeah,
we had cakes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember how many we actually...
Not many. There was like two or three. Yeah,
so we dropped it. We basically saved the actual, like, the scene. We only really shot the actual seeing the thing on the floor once or twice. I can't remember. Cause the first time after we tried to clean it up, we were like, well, there's no way we can clean this up and not make it look like we just put a mop on the floor.
That's what I was wondering. How did you get around that?
It was one of the last things we filmed of the night.
Yeah. And so everything else basically we shot, or we just avoided the floor completely. I think we kept filming, but we avoided the floor.
Yeah, well, I think there were some scenes that we were filming with the mess still kind of in the back, and we were cleaning it up as we were going, because it was, again, at the end of our night, our filming day, and we had to wrap out of there because there was a hard out. I can't remember what time. But so while we were filming in the kitchen, we had me... I think my makeup person and the BTS, or not BTS, I think we had one other person helping me clean the grounds as we were filming in the kitchen. And then and Anthony and I would switch off, and then I would direct part of that, and then he would help out. So we would tag team.
So moral of the story is no more cakes on floors and films.
Not if you're in a rush and with less people.
I mean, it's what adds to the fun of it, though, too, because you sort of think to yourself, oh, yeah, we'll just drop the cake on the ground. It'll be fine. And we'll have a couple of cleanups, and then we'll do it again. I think after the first cleanup, we were like, there's no way this floor is going to look like we just cleaned it, basically.
Cream cakes are difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking that looks like lots of whipped cream mess on it. Okay, yeah. I'm going to go back to the running room. Is it normal to have so many shoes out in a store with one person?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
really?
How about this?
Not that many.
It's happened to me before. That's kind of like, I mean, a lot of that scene was from my own just like experience. And I mean, I've had times where I've brought out basically like the entire store for a person because we just couldn't find the right one, or there wasn't, like, they were being finicky or whatever it was. And if you have the time, sometimes if the person isn't trying to get out of there quickly, then you'll stay there for hours. So it was kind of true, kind of like a little bit of an exaggeration, but not that much.
Yeah.
Wow.
I've
gone shoe shopping and I've had probably that many boxes around me.
And if you talk to runners, like especially new runners and stuff, like they don't want to get it wrong because they don't, mm-hmm. they feel as though like if they don't want to get hurt, like this is almost like if they pick the wrong one, they might get hurt. You know, I mean, it's kind of almost superstition in a way, because that's not really going to happen. But
okay. Yeah. In Cora's training montage, how much running do you really make her do?
Not as much as it looks. I mean, the interesting thing was it was a very hot summer during that time. And so a lot of it was more just, it was just so hot that we didn't do a lot of takes with running, like honestly, like, and most of what we did, you see in the film. So
we didn't use some of it. Like there was one at, I think it was Kitts Beach.
Right.
We didn't even use all of it. And, you know, whenever we had some time, we would go, hey, let's go for a run. And in fact, there was that one scene in the snow just after her breakup. That was in December, the first day of snowfall. And I think sometime in the night, we called Jovi up and said, hey, so there's snow. How do you feel about getting up and coming over and doing a few scenes at, I think it was like 4 or 5 in the morning, something crazy like that. And she was game. And we didn't even give her proper shoes. We purposely gave her those
canvas
shoes, like just plain canvas shoes. And she was a real good sport about it.
Yeah. It was cold.
It was very cold.
There's some stabilization in the footage where we had to stabilize the camera footage because the camera was...
We couldn't stop the hands from shaking.
We have a film. It seems to be a common theme. Knowing an athlete, knowing when he is done. I'm just talking about your main male athlete. Now, do you feel as a writer, athletes should know when they're done, or they just feel you being a triathlete have retired of someone? So how did you know you were done? Or how do you think an athlete should know they're done?
How do we think an athlete? I think that's all. That's actually, they write books about that stuff, like about people coming to the sunset of their career and trying to, and especially for a professional, I would say any athlete who, you know, was in a prime at some point has known nothing other than this for their life. I don't know that there is a point where I don't think there's a defined thing where you say you're done. I mean, I think that's the question, right? Like there's always one more kick at the can, especially for Trevor. I mean, he comes in second in the world championship race and he's supposed to retire, but how do you retire when you've been that close? That's, I think, the question we were asking for that character. And I think that if you asked any person who's competed in the Olympics or competed in any of those sports, or even a football player or a hockey player or a baseball player,
competitive.
I think that you just realize at some point that you just can't do it anymore, or you don't want to do it anymore. The hunger's not there anymore. And I don't know that there's a right time. Some people never give it up. So that might be said for a lot of us.
I want to give you guys full credit for one shot. So I don't know who took it. There's a shot of steam coming out of the water. It is beautiful.
It's
a bunch of people. Absolutely nothing against anything else you did. I think my favorite shot in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
When was that taken? First thing in the morning or at night? Or
no, that was the first thing in the morning.
Did you know that was coming?
I no. I mean, I think that was like the fact that there was that. Because we shot that actually up in Whistler, British Columbia, which is a mountain town. And so overnight it usually does get colder, but it does start to warm up quite quickly in the summer. So it goes from cold to like summer weather very quickly. So you get that
mist,
that, you know, yeah, that almost like evaporating frost in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And it creates a perfectly natural smoke machine for you that, I don't think we could have we ever thought that it was going to look like that.
We also, in our small team of people, we also didn't actually have Agrippa Lex team. So there was no lighting except for the last day for like when we filmed the very, very last race, the finish line. That was really the only day we ever had lights, like film lights. Luckily, most races, they have their own lights. Like you'll see them in some of the shots. Those were the actual race lights. Like we never brought those in. So we were very lucky to get a lot of these shots and have the lighting gods smile on us.
Okay. In the editing, you also couple that shot right after with a beautiful mountain shot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that the plan just to keep me on that picture as high the whole time? Because Literally, it's just a beautiful shot to another beautiful shot.
And then that's the midpoint of the movie. Like that's almost halfway. That's right at the halfway point of the movie. And then things start to spiral for Trevor, at least. And that's when the fight happens with Cora and her sister sort of. So like, it's basically like, picturesque. You think everything's going well. We're getting, you know, their lives are coming together and smash. So yeah, the idea was to tie those two together as like both of them feel like they're moving on with their lives. And then they're both brought back down to the reality of who they are as people.
And another thing about both of those scenes is there's a point where they have that thought where, you know, okay, now I feel like I can catch a breath. And that's partially, you know, Trevor and looking in the mirror and he's visualizing the race and he's breathing, he's having that breathing exercise. And when Cora, when she goes up the mountain, she also takes a moment to breathe. It's one of those things where you're just so consumed by all the things that are going on in your life. Sometimes you forget to breathe. And that's what they're both doing. They're breathing. They're taking a moment and they're going, oh, now I can have a moment. Everything seems fine, air quotes. And then again, like Anthony said, smash, something happens.
Okay, I think I've covered everything but my fun questions, which you cannot prepare for, so you're out of luck.
They're done.
So, first time on the show, I always ask everybody the same first question. Your favorite film?
You can go first.
My favorite film? Well, gosh, it depends on what day of the week you ask me. I would say, from a nostalgia point, I loved Jaws growing up. I love Lawrence of, so I'm giving you more than one, but Lawrence of Arabia, Road to Perdition.
Oh, great film.
You know, that, yeah, I mean, I love movies that tell really good cinematic stories that are a bit genre too. I love films that can be artistic, but also be genre.
I think the first film that really made me sit at the edge of my seat was Pan's Labyrinth. Pan's Labyrinth was probably my favorite. I love the aesthetic. I love the light. I loved everything about it. I mean, it's a dark film, with a dark story, but I just loved it so much. So Pan's Labyrinth is probably one of my favorites.
Your favorite film from last year?
From last year. Ooh. I guess we should say everywhere, all at once was, I think the best film made. I'll say that.
It was definitely very interesting. Like I thought it was interesting. I thought it was visually like stimulating. Like I thought a lot of it was very, like it just kind of blew your mind a little bit for sure.
And I'm also the hard part. I'm trying to think also with the pandemic, I don't remember what was last year and what was the year before.
We also worked a lot last year.
It's all kind of blended together.
Yeah. Don't worry but
I really enjoyed Belfast as well.
That's year before.
that's year before.
Okay. Since you are drinking on my show and you can only see that in the video, what's your favorite drink? Your last question.
Oh, I'll take that one first. Mine is scotch.
That's what I thought he was drinking was a scotch. It looked like to me. I would argue it looked like a scotch.
Yeah, there's a drink out there called Writer's Tears.
Oh.
Which is a scotch bourbon, I think. And so that's our, that's perfect.
When we wrap the shoot, on the very last day, I don't know if you can tell, but it was what it was supposed to be at the end of summer. We were supposed to film it. Turned out to be kind of in November when we ended up filming it. And it was snowing the entire day, except for when we rolled the cameras.
Oh, perfect.
So our poor volunteers who are like, I guess they're not going to like the speculators or spectators and our crew and our actors, they were all wearing summer clothes. And I felt, I mean, they were real champs about it. But then at the end of the night when we wrapped, we opened up a bottle of Writer's Tears. And we all basically finished that bottle.
Excellent. Okay. Before I let you go, you got to tell everybody where you can find this film other than Tubi, which I do know it's on Tubi, and it's Tubi in Canada and Tubi in the US. I know that.
Correct. And so Amazon, it's on now. Amazon US and UK.
Prime.
At Prime, yeah. Then it's also on Hoopla, which is the public library.
Cool.
And then Tubi. And Popsyplex.
I've never heard of it.
I know I hadn't either, and now it's up there as well, and it's available there. I think that's an AVOD as well, and a advertising platform as well. So it's on those platforms, and then we have it up on our Vimeo site as well. So,
well, that's it for me. Thank you, and have a good night.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.